Hello everybody. Today in this particular chapter and topic of discussion, we will look at the global aspect of how supply chain operates when organizations breach their national boundaries, when they go beyond their national boundaries and operate on a global level. What are the kind of strategic positioning and planning that we need to do to counter that? So this is on global strategic positioning with respect to supply chain. Now, global supply chain integration. Global integration goes beyond worldwide presence to provide the visibility and control needed to respond rapidly to global market dynamics and achieve the highest level of operating efficiency and cost effectiveness. Now, the reason why we see such an upsurge in the global operations is that all organizations now want to prosper, want to increase their sales, etc., beyond their own country of origin and operations. So if there is a company which is originated in India, and you will see that in many probability it will be also exporting material out of India, it will be importing raw materials from out of India, manufacturing it in India, or it might have a manufacturing base which is totally outside. It might have a manufacturing base in Mexico or Brazil or somewhere else, and the market may still be India, the market may be some other country. So the country, the company is originated, is established, is commissioned in India, it has a manufacturing plant somewhere in America, it has a customer somewhere in South America. So that's the kind of reach that I am talking about. Global logistics must accommodate operations in a variety of different national, political and economic settings, while also dealing with increased uncertainties associated with the distance, demand and other issues. So whatever are the problems or whatever are the challenges which supply chain and logistics managers face for a national operation, the same challenges will also be there in a slightly more complex manner when you are dealing with a global operation. Now, the main headings under which these problems come will mostly be the same. You have forecast uncertainty, you have manufacturing uncertainty, you have inventory risk, etc. So the problems, the main problems remain the same, but since you are operating at more number of units, that too in foreign countries with their own laws and regulations, languages, weather, etc., the complexity increases very much. Global supply chain management usually involves a plethora of countries. It also usually comes with a plethora of new difficulties. One that companies need to consider is the overall cost. So when you are talking about cost, the importance of cost management is even more manifold, even more increased when you are looking at operations at many countries of the world. The migration from a fragmented multi-vendor environment to a single supply chain partner has significantly enhanced global execution and visibility, resulting in lower operating cost and faster time to market. Now let's also look at some of the nitty-gritties and intricacies of global economy and how it impacts the global logistical operations. International trade is becoming a bigger part of the world's economic activity. Supply chain success is closely linked to the appropriate use of transportation. So when we talk about the global operating scale, when we talk about the global arena, one of the things, or the most important thing which makes this possible, is logistics, makes it possible is transportation. Because you have to move your material from a continent to another continent, you have to do it with lowest possible cost, you have to do it on the right amount of time, you have to maintain inventories in such a way that the uncertainties of, say, sea freight or even long distance road or rail transportation, the delays, etc., do not cause the business to suffer. In terms of complexity, global operations, in contrast to domestic, are characterized by increased uncertainty and decreased ability to control. Now, decreased ability to control is something that people and managers at all companies who operate in global scale always work upon. So it is not that they do not know what are the risks. So risk mitigation plans are always in place to take care of uncertain exigencies. Uncertainties can result from longer distances, meaning longer lead times and transit times, and decreased market knowledge. Now, decreased market knowledge is something that can be taken care of quite easily. So, when you want to operate in a country for the first time, you will not start the operations the day you start thinking about it. You will have to send your people there, you might have to establish your offices, take the necessary regulatory controls, talk to or link with somebody who is already there. So, many companies as a strategy start doing business through a distributor initially when they enter a foreign market. Only after they have a certain amount of volume and comfort that they know the business there, do they migrate from that to setting up of their own operations in that particular country. International operations and the local presence. The second stage of international development is characterized by establishment of operations with a foreign country. See, it's, you know, this is psyche, the psychology of people is such that they will always prefer an organization which has their unit in a particular country. You might still be serving or supplying material of a particular brand in a particular country and you do not have any manufacturing or, you know, official base there. You can still supply material through distributors and retail chain stores, etc. But people will prefer if they know that this organization is also there in my country. You know, that feeling of association comes when you physically set up shops. So, once the business expands to a certain amount, say whatever that amount is up to a company, you know, it differs from company to company, but when it does, most organizations try to set up some kind of a, you know, a corporate headquarters, you know, kind of a corporate office or a manufacturing base or a warehouse, something to relate with that particular country. International operations include combinations of marketing, sales, production and logistics. So, not only does international presence mean that you will have to have a good supply chain network, it also means you will have to have a sales network there, financial network and marketing and other support services. Establishment of local facilities and operations serves to increase market awareness and sensitivity. This is often referred to as gaining the local presence. Now, one of the factors which has encouraged or really augmented this growth of multinational operations is basically the emergence of multinational companies. Now, MNCs is a term that we all have heard. MNCs basically are organizations which are established in one country, but they have a global presence. You talk over companies like Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Johnson & Johnson, you know, these are companies, just few examples, there are many giants out there. These are companies which say are in one, let's talk about Coke for example, or Pepsi for example. So, although they are headquartered out of the United States, they operate in more than perhaps 200 countries across the world. So, when you have such companies which are also at times referred to as stateless enterprises because they do not restrict their operations in particular states or particular countries, they spread out. So, these are enterprises, mostly the MNCs, that effectively make decisions irrespective of national boundaries. So, their decisions are not limited by national boundaries, although all of them, when in whichever country they operate, they will always make it a point to follow all the local laws, regulations and customs to ensure that their product, the way they are doing business is compliant and the people of that particular country are not annoyed, because, you know, at times cultural differences are something that we cannot imagine. Like you go to a country like Japan, you will have customs which are so different. There has to be a certain amount of respect that you give to people when you welcome each other, etc. So all these things are very important. It is not that I just make my product in the United States, I just sell them everywhere in the world. You will have to cater to local laws, you will have to ensure that your products are labeled accordingly, the languages that are spoken in that country, the way that you label your product, they should be understood. Like, for example, if you send something written in English to an Arabic country, for example, it might not suffice. You need to also ensure that your label contains a local language which the people there can read. In these, even though historically they have a country of foundation, a high percentage of its sales, ownership and assets are outside the country of origin. Now, for example, there might be a company which is headquartered in France or Germany, but if you look at their sales, their turnover, you will see that more than 50% of their sales might be coming outside Germany or France or even out of Europe. So that is what all these companies have realized, that the potential of growth today is mainly in countries like China, India, Brazil. Africa is the newest continent where everybody is turning their attention. That's supposed to be and most probably will be the future in the next 50 years. That will perhaps grow at a rate which we cannot think of. So maybe at 50 years from now, the rate of growth will be much more than the growth of Southeast Asian or South Asian countries at that point in time. These enterprises contrast sharply to operations guided by either an export-import or an international perspective. Now, as supply chain managers, as logistics managers, when you are responsible for handling operations in more than one country, what do you do? What are the things that you need to take care of? What are the areas requiring attention? The global supply chain management involves a company's worldwide interests and suppliers rather than simply a local or a national orientation. Global supply chain management usually involves a plethora of countries and, of course, which brings in a lot of new difficulties. Now, what are some of the difficulties which come with multinational operations? When you operate in more than one country, what are the kind of difficulties? You will have a much wider plate. So your appetite has grown, you have a bigger plate, you have number of units, you have multicultural people. So the overall cost management becomes complex. Exchange rate fluctuation. This is again a very, very important factor. If you look at India, if you look at the condition of India in 2013, for example, you will see that overall, the rupee depreciated a lot, more than 15% as compared to 2012. Now, with such fluctuations, although the Indian arm of the business has done the same amount of turnover, when that parent company globally, whether in the US or somewhere else, converts that into a dollar or a other kind of international currency, the effect will be much lesser. So that's why companies report that FX adjusted figures. So that's the kind of issues that have. Then you have time management problems because you are crossing borders. So when you are discussing with your partners or colleagues in other countries, you will have time issues. For example, imagine you want to have a call with a group of your counterparts from Australia, China, India, Bangladesh, and even, let's say, Australia. So Australia to United States almost. So you're looking at a time gap of more than 14, 16 hours. So when you set up that call, somebody somewhere will be quite inconvenienced by the time. So for somebody it will be very early morning, somebody it will be very late in the night. So such kind of issues will come. Weather conditions are very different. So you will see when people from foreign companies visit India, especially in the heat of summer or in the rampant monsoon that we face in July, August this season, they have a lot of difficulties. Either they defer their visits or they are very, very cautious when they are visiting. The custom clearance and other import export issues are always there. The clearance time in different countries is different, and there is also the issue of how the government of that particular country, you know, how fast it is, or is it still engrossed in a lot of red tape which delays things. Now, what are some of the actions that can help to resolve these difficulties? The company needs to make decisions about its overall outsourcing plan, how it wants to do business. So, most global corporations have manufacturing units in various countries. So, there might be a streamlining of the units. They might feel that we will use one particular site in the world to supply a particular product to all other sites rather than having four operations from all the individual countries. Similarly, for vendors, there might be some vendors who are chosen to supply material to various organizational units throughout the globe. Proper supplier selection. Companies must make decisions about the number of suppliers to use. Fewer suppliers may be easier to manage but could also lead to potential problems if one vendor is unable to deliver. For example, you have the issue of force majeure. So, like some act of God, some riots, strike, etc., and the vendor's plant is down, then supplies are impacted throughout the world. Now, that can be a disaster. So, how you manage your suppliers is very, very important. You must have risk management policies in place. Now, all this logistics and global operations is possible because transportation management on a global scale is managed in a very efficient manner. Transportation plays a central role in global supply chain operations, moving inbound materials from supply to manufacturing facilities, repositioning inventory among different plants and distribution centers, and delivering finished products to customers. To remain competitive on a truly global stage, companies are looking for new partners that can generate savings in operating costs, and they are finding them in Asia also. So you have a lot of operations in India, in China, in Malaysia, in Philippines, etc., which are getting promoted because of this. The practice is sometimes called as offshoring or global sourcing. Apart from transportation, certain operational considerations are also important when we want to successfully operate on a global scenario. International operations typically require multiple languages for both product and documentation. Although English is the general language of commerce, some countries require the transportation and customs documentation be provided also in the local language. This increase in the time and effort which all this necessitates requires that complex documentations must be translated prior to the shipment. Secondly, global commerce is unique. National accommodations such as performance features, power supply characteristics and safety requirements. These also differ from country to country. The third operating difference is the sheer amount of documentation required for international operations. But with modern technology, with good ERPs like SAP, etc., the need for documentation is only restricted to the shipping documents, etc., or the paperwork which is required by the legal or the regulatory standards of that company. When you have good ERP packages, the documentation requirement actually goes down, because you might be sitting in Atlanta, you are able to see your stock, your goods in transit, etc., for any operation anywhere in the world. So where you are practically makes no difference today. But for that you need good systems, you need good emails, you need good chatting software, you need good mobile connectivity, and if you think about it, it's available. You have to invest initially, but then you reap benefits for a very long period of time. The fourth operating difference is the high incidence of counter trade and duty drawback found in some international situations. So operationally, there are many things that we need to take care. In terms of systems, operational integration requires the ability to route orders and manage inventory requirements electronically throughout the world. So for example, I might be having problems in sourcing a particular raw material from the vendor in India. Now, if that particular material is used in some other unit of the same company, I can just log into my ERP, give the material code, and see in which plant, wherever in the world, which batch number is lying. So I can just do that. I just don't need to write to anybody. I don't need to call up anybody. Development of supportive technology integration represents substantial capital investment. As I said, you need to invest initially, but then you will reap the benefits. Alliances. A final difference in international operation is the extended role of third-party alliances. While alliances with carriers and specialized service suppliers are important in domestic operations, they are essential in international commerce. So it will always be helpful if you have global contracts, like you have contracts with some big suppliers who operate globally. So you agree on some price agreement which will be relevant to all the sourcing requirements in any country, wherever it is in the world. Or you might agree for a volume-based rebate. When you have operations in many countries in the world, you might pool in all the quantities, and at the end of the day, the company gets a rebate centrally, which can be distributed to all the other affiliates. International alliances offer market access and expertise and reduce the inherent risk in global operations. The number of alternatives and the complexity of globalizations require increased use of alliances. Now, when you operate on a global level, one of the risks that is there is how do you handle or how do you manage supply chain security? So, what is supply chain security? Globalization can make supply chains more brittle and can increase the risk of supply chain disruption. So, as I said initially in this lecture, that whatever are your problems, risk areas for domestic, the same will be there for in the global front. There will be few new, but nothing is going to get reduced because of global operations. So we need to be more agile, we need to be more efficient, we need to be more flexible. Approaches for identifying, evaluating, treating and monitoring supply chain security will differ across individual enterprises depending on their industry, nature of the supply chains and their risk tolerance. Some companies are very, very averse to risk taking. They are very careful. They are at times slow in taking decisions, but they don't mind losing business, but they want to be very sure. They don't want any unnecessary financial risk. On the contrary, there are some companies which can be associated with certain countries who are very risk taking. They will do a thorough analysis, but they will still go ahead and take the risk, because if they win it, they win it big. If they lose, they might not lose that much, but they still want to take the risk. Once a firm understands how to identify risks, it may undertake risk identification and assessment, which includes identification analysis and risk evaluation. Now, what is risk identification? Risk identification may entail using a list of common risks, including external, like natural disasters, accidents, sabotage, labor uncertainty, supplier risks, financial issues, or distribution risks. Once a firm has identified and prioritized the risks that it faces, it can devise risk treatment plan. This includes, but is not limited to, measures to protect supply chain from risks, plans to respond to events that these risks may cause. This is most important. You cannot have a foolproof system. There will be somewhere, sometime, some unwanted disturbance. What is important is that you should have plans to respond to the events that these risks may cause. Plans to continue operations in the face of disruptions and fully recovering from them. That's what it takes. Now, another feature why we see such rampant globalization is the concept of global sourcing. Now, global sourcing is nothing but sourcing your materials from one or few countries which might not be the place where you are manufacturing. Meaning, I have my manufacturing units in US, in Europe, in China. I might find that if I source a particular material which is homogeneous, which is required in all these three continents from a supplier in India, I might get a lot of benefit in price, and also I'll get supply reliability. This is called global sourcing. Now, factors which have made crafting a supply chain and outsourcing strategy a central focus for firms include rapid changes in demand for products and services, the globalization of the economy, availability of advanced planning tools, and communication tools for coordinating the activities of supply chain participants. So, all this has encouraged global sourcing to a great degree. Now, it is commonly found that global sourcing initiatives and programs form an integral part of the strategic sourcing plan and procurement strategy of many multinational companies. Common examples of globally sourced products or services, labor-intensive products which are used by, you know, using cheap Chinese labor. We recently heard about the tragedy in Bangladesh where a big garment manufacturing hub had an accident where many laborers died. So, although global sourcing is very important, it must also be understood by all multinational organizations that they should never encourage anything which relates to the dignity of human labor. So, in the sense that they should not encourage practices or procedures in which the underage children are used, etc. That should be not encouraged, and that mostly all MNCs are responsible and they do take care of that. Now, a ramification of global sourcing is low cost country sourcing. Although it is not the whole and soul of global sourcing, it's a major component. Low cost country sourcing means sourcing from a low cost country. It's simple as that. So, it is a procurement strategy in which a company sources materials from countries with lower labor rates and production costs in order to cut operating expenses. Now, not only is this related to products, if you see the huge demand of Indian professional software, for example, in globally, is also aided by the fact that the amount that you pay to these people when they work in countries like the US or UK or elsewhere is lower than what a citizen of that country has to be paid. Now, that can be another way in which you are doing a low cost country sourcing. Countries which offer low cost environment and are considered to be ideal are like, examples are like China, countries in South Asia, India, Brazil, Turkey. So, countries which are not fully developed today, who are still on the developing path, offer labor rates which are much cheaper than they are in the developed nations. Now, what are the challenges of low cost country sourcing? The quality and delivery might be unreliable, although it has been hugely mitigated. Today, India supplies a lot of material to the developed nation as a part of the global organizations sourcing from India, etc. But the delivery timelines and quality are almost at par with global standards. But yes, it can be a risk. Number of cultural and political differences, language barriers. So, for example, like when you are dealing with China, you either need to know the language or you need to know somebody who knows the particular language, Chinese language. The quality of labor, business license limitations, project management challenges, technical capabilities in the supply base, and legislations to protect copyrights and patents. So, one of the risk areas is protecting your intellectual property rights, the IPRs. So, that's something which most MNCs would like to protect and try to protect to their utmost possible levels. Now, some guidelines include manufacturing companies should consider opportunities to improve efficiency at home and not only consider the offshore alternative in isolation. So, definitely. So, when you are deciding that it is a low cost alternative, you must have done your homework wherein you are convinced that sourcing it from your own country will definitely be at a higher cost and lower efficiency. To balance the risks in different countries, a portfolio approach where a large number of criteria are considered, which include the maturity and stability of the nation's infrastructures. For example, people will be much more keen to, let's say, operate in India than they would be at this point in time operating out of Iraq, for example, where political stability is a big question mark. The political characteristics, the size of domestic market and local demand, currency risk, climate and weather patterns, language skills, management training, cultural characteristics. So all these need to be understood before you take the decision. There is a need for further understanding of the supply chain cost trade-offs between cost and flexibility. So, for example, if your sourcing partner is very low on the cost, but also very low in the flexibility index, then that's again an issue. You might get very cheap material, but if your demand swings ups and downsides are not immediately taken care of, then you are actually incurring more cost than what you think you are saving. Building trust and relationship appears to be an important requirement for global sourcing. Lee and Wolf in 2003 suggested 6 risk mitigation strategies. What are these? Comprehensive tracking and monitoring. As I said, visibility in the supply chain is of paramount importance, especially so when you are operating in a multi-country environment where your stocks, your people, your resources are spread over numerous geographical units. Total supply chain network visibility. From this, it follows that you need to have your visibility of the whole supply chain sitting anywhere. You should know what is happening in another place. Flexible sourcing strategies. So once you have flexible sourcing strategies, even if one of your vendor is offline for a few months, your production, your inventory levels should not suddenly get depleted and you should not run out of stocks to sell. Balanced inventory management. So don't go for the kill. Don't say I need zero level inventory. It might work for certain sectors like the auto sector, but for many other sectors, zero inventory and GIT might not fully work. Product and process design and demand based management. So you need to balance between what the market is pulling and what you are pushing into the market. So in this particular chapter, we looked at how supply chain and logistics has managed itself in the global arena. What are the many risks and challenges which are there when you are operating in a multinational environment where you have organizations spread across various countries, each with their own legislations, customs, behavior, languages, etc. So understanding this will enable especially people who are currently working in organizations which have more than one country, businesses, and also for people who might be working in such organizations or who will be joining businesses which would like to operate on a global arena. Thank you.